This is The State of Things. I'm Frank Stacio. Nothing like a shoebox of old photos to make you drop everything and take time to reminisce. Same sort of thing happened to Jim Wallace when he dusted off rolls of film that he had stored away for 40 years. But the images he found weren't birthday parties and family vacations. They were shots of police officers using force to stop young protesters, hand-drawn signs condemning racial integration, and a cross in flames. See, Jim was the photographer for the Daily Tar Heel in the 1960s. That's the student-run newspaper on the campus of UNC Chapel Hill. Among those first assignments were to cover the civil rights movement as it happened here locally. Most of his photos were never published, but collectively they tell a story of how the small college town reacted to the national call for racial equality. Jim Wallace is with us today to talk about documenting that period in Chapel Hill's history. Welcome to The State of Things, Jim. Good to have you here.
Nice to be here.
Chapel Hill, when did it first become engaged in the civil rights movement?
Early, not very long, in the late 50s, after the first sit-in at the Woolworths lunch counter in Greensboro. Some students from the local high school did some protests in front of some of the segregated places. But it was really not until 1961 when the movement, or the struggle, as it was also called, became active in terms of trying to get what we would think today would be a very simple goal. All of the demonstrations at that time were towards public accommodations. It was very simple. They wanted to be able to eat in any of the restaurants in Chapel Hill.
Very simple and very complex, because it would overthrow a social order that was based, of course, on a premise of white supremacy. You were a young college student. When did you join the Tar Heel, the staff of the Tar Heel?
I joined the staff of the Tar Heel in 1961.
And why? Were you determined to become, were you looking for a career in journalism at the time?
I was actually looking for a career in what was then called radio, television, motion pictures. Wandered into the Daily Tar Heel office. I had been shooting still photographs for high school yearbooks and whatnot for while I was in high school. And started working with a wonderful group of editors.
So is it safe to say then that the Tar Heel had a real, this is a very conscious decision on the part of Tar Heel management, the editorial
Absolutely.
Staff, to cover this
especially Wayne King and Jim Klotfelter and the others. Jim Klotfelter actually sent Mike Putzel, who was a student reporter at that time, to Ole Miss to try to get coverage of James Meredith.
So you actually left. The Tar Heel was sending people outside of Chapel Hill to cover this movement.
In many instances, yes. We also covered some of what was happening here in Durham and in Raleigh. But mainly, the decision was based upon, first off, the marches and later the sit-ins, but beginning with the picketing and then transitioning into marches in the street, were not only taking place right at our front door, but beyond that, there were not very many at that time, but there were black students at UNC who were unable to eat in many of the restaurants downtown. And the folks that were at the Tar Heel felt that if the local church people, students, high school students, plus a lot of students from the university were marching and protesting and demonstrating to try to get public accommodations. I mean, a very simple thing. They wanted to be able to go in and eat. That it was worthy of following.
Following at the Daily Tar Heel.
At the Daily Tar Heel. And the other thing was that most of the local papers in Durham and Raleigh and Chapel Hill did not do any extensive coverage of the demonstrations. Every once in a while, there might be a paragraph someplace.
Right.
But it has been noted that it was really the Daily Tar Heel that gave most of the attention to what was going on. And you almost never saw photographs in any of the local papers.
Well, you've got about 40 images now in this collection that you have.
Well, more than that. But there's actually about 100 in this book, which is being published by Dover Publications, and it's called Courage in the Moment, Struggle for Civil Rights, 1961 to 1964, some of which have never been published, and text by an author named Paul Dixon, and a foreword by Dr. Lonnie Bunch, who is the director of the new Smithsonian's National Museum of African American History and Culture.
So we've got the Courage in the Moment, and the cover, the photo on the cover is a pretty stark-looking photograph.
The black gentleman is named Hilliard Caldwell, and he was very active in the movement and was very active in the marches. And one of the interesting things is that after the Civil Rights Act was passed and after the demonstrations were over with, Hilliard Caldwell went on to become an alderman in Carrboro.
And well, in this photograph, he is staring down what appears to be a white police officer who is staring straight ahead, and Hilliard is looking at him, and there's an American flag in the background with all kinds of signs. It is perhaps emblematic of that entire confrontation. Quite a shot. Do you remember where it was, where this was taken?
Franklin Street. Yeah. Most of the photographs in the book were either taken on Franklin Street or at one of the segregated restaurants or establishments. There was none of which are around anymore, but there was a place called the Rock Pile on the Durham side of Chapel Hill. There was a Brady's restaurant, and there was a restaurant called Watts and the Pines. One of the things that got the publisher and the fellow who's writing the text together with me to do this book that is primarily photographs is that it shows. We have all seen photographs from the 60s of civil rights movement, but you're looking at fire cannons and dogs and police with batons. That did not happen in Chapel Hill. In fact, as it turns out, the chief of police, Bill Blake, who has passed away now, had been reading Gandhi since the late 40s and, in fact, knew the techniques that the marchers and the sit-ins were going to use in terms of nonviolence and all of that. But it was Chief Blake and Detective Lindy Pendergrass, who is now the sheriff of Orange County and has been for a long time, who helped keep things cool and that is not to say that they didn't end up arresting a lot of people. That is not to say that in court a lot of people got harsh prison sentences. But it does say that you didn't see that kind of violence in the street in Chapel Hill.
A lot of the photographs do center on the demonstrations, but you on the anti-segregation demonstrations. You also have a photograph in here of a burning cross and a Klan rally. Tell us about that one.
It was the summer of 1964, and the Klan had one rally in the local area sometime prior to that, but I think it was closer to Easter time, and I was out of town. But they actually sent us, in effect, a publicity release that said, we're going to have a Klan rally, and it was at the intersection of State Road 86 and Interstate 85 between Chapel Hill and Hillsboro. And they billed it as a recruiting rally. I don't know what kind of publicity they thought they were going to get. These aren't the smartest people in the world, obviously, but nonetheless, a number of us went, including a gentleman named Mickey Blackwell, who, as I recall, had a car and I didn't. By the way, Blackwell later became a minister, and he's now president of the Baptist Children's Homes of North Carolina and doing a wonderful job. But we got there, and we had been told that the state police were going to be there to maintain control and whatnot. And when we pulled in, we discovered that they were not state police, but they were Klan security.
Well, there may have been some state police there. They just might have had hoods on. You don't know.
You never know. Well, actually, they couldn't cover their faces. There was a law of some kind prohibiting that. But they didn't bother me. We sort of stood off to the side, and I took those photographs and the others that are in the book. I am not 100% convinced that when they asked me my name and I told them I was Jim Wallace, that they didn't think that maybe I was related to the then governor of Alabama.
There you go.
Whatever works.
Yeah, well, what
the
was
secret
it like
to good photojournalism is being there.
And you were there. How did you feel?
It is the only time that I have really been fearful and for my safety. And I think Blackwell felt the same way. And we ran some pictures in the summer edition of the Tar Heel, which was weekly at that time.
When did you rediscover these films? Where were these pictures? Where have they been all this time?
Rolled up.
Did you know what you had? I mean, was it a kind of an aha?
I knew what I had.
Yeah.
First off, there were some, half a dozen or so, were published in a book in 1965 by an author named John Ely. Ely was an assistant to Governor Terry Sanford and, in fact, got me to donate some photographs to the Sanford administration's production of a book called North Carolina and the Negro that Terry Sanford put together. Right. I should probably note that from the research we did on this book, it appears that Terry Sanford was the first Southern governor to actively meet with leaders of the protests and demonstrations. And he did that at a meeting in Raleigh on July 3rd of 1963. I photographed that also.
What was it like for you going back over these photographs so many years later?
It was interesting in that I knew what was there, but we hadn't sort of put them together. What would happen was when I was working for the Tar Heel, we would shoot pictures, I would process them, I would let them hang up in Graham Memorial for an unknown number of months because there was always something else the next day. And I was in the Air Force ROTC, and when I graduated, barely, the Tar Heel was... I won't say my downfall. I mean, I wouldn't trade it for anything. But I had a C average the first semester of my freshman year. And I never got a C average back until the day I graduated in summer school.
Too busy taking pictures?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Did the paper itself, were there any repercussions for its daily coverage of what apparently the region wasn't particularly interested in seeing?
Sometimes. Most of the students on campus didn't have much interest. And let's face it, it wasn't the only thing that we covered. It stands out because we covered things that nobody else was. Right. But that doesn't mean that we weren't covering student government and basketball and whatnot. I mean, one of the highlights of my photographs was after the Wake Forest basketball game in 1964. There was a massive march and sit-in, and the folks who sat in blocked the exit to the parking lot to Woolen Gym.
Hmm.
So if you can imagine, and there's a photograph of that in the book, so if you can imagine people who've just been to the basketball game trying to get out in their cars and get out and not being able to, not to mention that all of the roads coming into Chapel Hill, there were sit-ins that blocked them, and there was a massive sit-in that blocked all of Franklin Street. There was large numbers of arrests, and it marked a high point in the numbers of people who were marching and sitting in. What they were trying to do back in January of 64 they had had a march from Durham to Chapel Hill. And it was in support of a public accommodations bill that the Chapel Hill Board of Aldermen were going to vote on the next day. It did not pass. And so James Farmer from the Congress of Racial Equality was in town, and a number of other people, and so they had threatened that if the aldermen didn't pass the public accommodations ordinance, that they would shut the town down, and that's what they did that day after the basketball game. It is interesting, in talking to some of the people who were involved in the movement at that time, and I don't know that this is a majority opinion, but from the people that I have talked to, the participants at that time, they feel that they never achieved the victory that they wanted. After the Board of Aldermen did not pass a public accommodations law, they had to wait until the federal government passed the Civil Rights Act, which opened up all restaurants and a number of other things.
What do you think is the significance of these photographs now?
I think that they help us to remember that the civil rights movement was not merely the March on Washington, but that it grew and it evolved from local movements throughout the South. And frankly, I think that with any luck, it will give some current student journalists the idea that they should think for themselves and that they should go out and report on things that they think are important.
Thanks so much for being with us.
Yeah, it is my pleasure.
Jim Wallace. His book of images from the civil rights movement in Chapel Hill is called Courage in the Moment, The Civil Rights Struggle, 1961 to 1964. That's the State of Things for today. Thanks for listening. You can go to our website, stateofthings.org. Have a great Independence Day and tune in to WUNC tomorrow at noon for a special program called Groundwork, Democracy Close to Home with NPR's Scott Simon. State of Things returns on Thursday. This is North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stachow.